This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Back of the Nest Preview Podcast. I'm your host, Terence Ford, and it's time for your weekly build-up to Crystal Palace's weekend fixture, this time away at Arsenal. Albert, unsurprisingly, is on holiday this week, but in his place, joining Hesketh and I, will be the Crystal Palace social media manager from the past, Sam Jordan. Yes, 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 it's Arsenal. We won there last season, Hesketh. Your first ever victory you saw live against Arsenal, I believe.
It was, yeah. And I said that I would never go again because I've peaked. But obviously I'm going to go again to watch us get hammered so I can start the cycle all over again.
Yes. Already heard in the background there, Sam Jordan. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam. Really appreciate it.
That's all right. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sorry about my voice. Normally it's awful and I've got a bit of a cold, so I sound even worse.
Yeah, I'm slowly recovering from my cold and I'm really excited because that means this week there's no lem sips and I can get into some of this.
What kind of beer do you like? Heineken? Fuck that shit! Pabst Blue Ribbon!
I'm excited for Beer Check. I get to drink beer and we got someone new on the pod as well. So before I get to you, Sam, let's go Hesketh. What generic off-the-shelf co-op beer are you drinking today?
Oh, boo. I'm not drinking beer. I'm classing it up. I'm having a glass of Rioja.
Rioja.
Which is very nice.
£6.50 bowl.
I didn't buy it, so free, as far as I'm concerned.
And Sam, what are you drinking? What did Londis reveal on the way home?
Well, I felt the pressure when you said I needed a hipster beer. And I didn't even make it to Londis. I went to the shop opposite, which I'm fairly sure is a front, because it has no sign up and it never has any produce in it. And I've misunderstood hipster, I think, for Tory. It's called Old Empire IPA. And it was rancid.
Is it any good?
I can't say I'm a fan so far. My tongue feels quite heavy, but we'll see how I go.
Might be to do with your cold. Right, so this week, it's quite a big can, this one. I've got from Pressure Drop. It's called Promenade. It's a yuzu, apricot, vanilla, and milk sugar triple fruited sour.
So you are, that's made up.
Genuinely not.
Albert, when you hear this, I know Albert's on holiday. When he hears this, he's going to fall into the sea in Greece, I think.
Oh, my word. That is so weird. I don't know if I like that or not, but I'm going to battle on through it. But then you've just reminded me there, Albert, he did send in a beer check for us. So let's have a little listen.
Evening, chaps. Greetings from Crete. It's Albert. Sorry I can't be there tonight, but I thought even though I'm lapping it up in Crete in lovely 28 degree temperatures, I thought that shouldn't rule me out of joining in with the beer check. So just to let you know, I've got a big pint of Mythos on the go and a frozen peach daiquiri. Stick that in your beer check. Thanks very much. Bye.
I mean, this promenade isn't far off of some sort of fruit daiquiri. I
it's so weird. It's like a milkshake, but not, I don't know. Okay, right, let's get into talking about some football. Crystal Palace have 22.5 million that we're owed for Wan-Bissaka next summer. We've released it early by doing some sort of loan deal with a bank where they'll give us the money for a small fee. I say small fee, it's somewhere in the region of about $500,000. And we can unlock that money early and then Manchester United will pay the bank instead. So, Hesketh, delightful this is, because we're going to, seems to suggest, we're going to sign someone big in January.
It's almost like we've done some homework, isn't it? Well, we always sort of moan at every transfer window that we're putting off the signings to the next window. So in the summer, we're like, oh, you know, everyone knows you've got the Wan-Bissaka money, so the prices will go up. We'll wait until January. And then in January, we get that, oh, there's no good deals, you know, because everyone's rushing to stay up or whatever. But it seems like if we're trying to release or get £22 million released to us, Michy's coming home.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been linked with Michy Batshuayi, obviously. He scored the winner tonight for Chelsea on the night recording, that is Wednesday, in Ajax. So, I mean, has he got himself into Lampard's plans there, maybe? Olivier Giroud is obviously not getting in the team and there's been some press links with him. And also Morales from Glasgow Rangers. Sam, do you know anything about Morales from Rangers?
I'm going to nip this in the bud and not disappoint either of you, but it is just my payoff, this 22 million. So it's not going to be any good use. I'm sorry.
Yeah, something like that. Your replacement, or one of your replacements, Ryan, he tweeted me the other day when I took a picture of Sellers Park with the lights on Monday night, even though there was no game, from my house. And he said, oh shit, I forgot to turn the lights off on my way out. Yeah. It was a glorious sight. If you head to my Twitter at Red and Blue Army 1, it was stunning, but I have no idea where the lights were on. So there you go. But yeah, I mean, Giroud or Batshuayi, I would take in a heartbeat, I'm pretty sure. Probably more Batshuayi over Giroud because he gets more goals. But probably actually just Batshuayi, because thinking Giroud is more of your target man, hold up kind of guy. And Roy Hodgson has shown he wants to move away from that. So probably it would be better for Batshuayi. But Morales, Hesketh, coming from the Scottish League. He scored a fair few amount of goals up there. Almost got as many red cards as well. So would you take a punt on him for 20 mil?
I mean, if it's that of him and Michy, I'd definitely go for Batshuayi. Purely because we know that he can do it in the Premier League. I know there's the argument that Morales has scored a lot of goals, but you know, the moves from Scotland to England is not usually as prolific as you want it to be. So, as I say, he's probably quite entertaining. I would quite like to have him in the team when we play Brighton, for example, and have him, you know, mug off Lewis Dunk and all their fans. But in terms of an actual goal threat, I think Michy is the one. I don't know if Sam agrees, but of the two, I definitely go for Batshuayi.
Yeah, I think I'd exactly the same, to be honest. Because, like you say, Morelos has that sort of chaos factor of being seemingly a psychopath. But I don't know how valuable that is if you're after a striker to score goals, if they're going to get sent off every third or fourth game. Although I have just made that stat up, so obviously that may not be the case.
He does get sent off a lot. But and Hesketh, I always knew you'd be a bit too straight edge for a Colombian rock up front.
What can I say? I'll keep it pure.
I don't know if anybody went to see the Team of the 80s documentary, which was broadcast somewhere in Croydon. Sam, it's being broadcast tonight on TV. That's Wednesday night. It's too late for you to get to listen to me and get recording, but I'm sure it'll be repeated at some point. You're going to be watching that?
I am. As a new dad, I will not. I would have if I didn't have a bedtime of about 9:30 these days, but it's because it's one of those. I know sort of some of the guys that got it off the ground and helped make it, and it's definitely a bit of a passion project for them. And it looks really good. And the amount that the club put into doing the Box Park event and stuff like that, it's like there's clearly some sort of money behind it or some thought has gone into it. So you've got to think it's going to be, and it's before my time, so I'd be interested in it.
Oh no, Hesketh, he said Box Park, disaster.
Oh, you're on Terry's blacklist now, mate.
I still can't believe they put that Brighton crest up in Croydon. I cannot believe it. So, yeah, right. That's all we're going to touch on this week in terms of Palace-wise because, well, it'd be a little bit more in-depth Palace because we want to ask Sam some questions. So in prep for today's show, I asked him for his few of his favourite tweets during his time at the club. Now, the one we'll start with, Sam, was Laura Kussenberger tweeted, just officially confirmed, she'll, being Theresa May, will go to Palace at 12:30. you had some fun with this one.
Yeah. It's such a stupid joke, isn't it? We quoted it from the club account saying, please be aware, nothing's official until the club confirm. And it was during the summer transfer window. And so it flew. It just came about through, as they, like, any good work I did at Palace came about through trying to make the person I was sat next to at the time laugh, which is not great for my CV. But I was in Thornton Heath Sainsbury's CAF with Terry Byfield, club legend Terry Byfield, getting a coffee. And we saw that tweet came in. And we were laughing about it between the two of us. And we're like, oh, shall we do it? Fuck it, let's just go and hit send. And by the time we were back inside Selhurst, it had already sort of started gaining pace. And then by Monday morning, when we had content meeting, I found out that Steve quite liked it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's usually Twitter tends to fall more on likes these days, but to see someone get 15,000 retweets is that's a pretty hefty number. So yeah, good work on that one. And yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of my dad's mates who support Palace are always making Palace jokes whenever it's mentioned as the royal family in the paper. So I can see why that went down very, very well. Making dad jokes there, you've got in early. Adopting the role.
Exactly. Who knew back then?
Another one was the we're all waiting with bated breath for Max Meyer to be announced. There'd obviously been some leaked photos of him on the roof getting his pictures done on a like grainy mobile phone kind of footage. And you know, Palace fans often, you know, a lot of deals that we think are over the line are going to be finished have fallen through at the last minute, so we're all there waiting with bated breath, notifications on. And what did you decide to do?
I tweeted from the club that you could sign up to join the newsletter for the latest club news.
People just went wild. It was a combination of people liking it, loving it, and people just hating you.
A lot of hating me, yeah.
One tweet with your name, you being tagged in with just the fire emoji, just getting hundreds of likes.
That'll be my tombstone, I think. Who knew that during the transfer window, football fans are quite on edge, and everyone has notifications set, so it's just absolute like fish in a barrel for putting out stupid tweets.
Did you measure the uptake on signings to the newsletters?
That wasn't my field, so I didn't care.
Just creating more work for other people. Then we can go back to December 2016. Crystal Palace are playing Southampton. 70 minutes into the game on Christian Benteke's birthday.
Yeah, he got booked. And I tweeted that Benteke gets a card for his birthday. It's yellow as the payoff. And someone replied saying, oh, how long have you waited to do that? But all of the match tweets have the minute. It was one, so I just replied saying 70 minutes in the press conference after the game.
It made the press conference after the game as well.
I was in the press conference waiting for who would have been the manager then during the carousel. And I was trying to make Johnny, the old program editor, laugh. And so I showed him what I was going to reply to someone. And it fills the time when you're waiting for the manager.
And then this was, I mean, this one went super viral in terms of getting up in towards the 75,000 likes mark. when a Palace fan tweeted, after Palace tweeted the lineup saying, "I'll just be happy if we get a corner when we were playing at Manchester City away on December the 22nd, 2018. And of course, we all know what happened there. We somehow, in some freak of nature, turned them over 3-2 with notably Townsend's thunderbolt from 30 yards that later got nominated for Best Goal of the Year award. But we didn't get a corner, did we, Sam?
No, that's right. And Alex and I, the other social media staff, and Mason, the old cameraman, were in a pub in Crystal Palace having a pre-Christmas drink. I think it might have been the Sunday, the following day, after the City game. And Alex tweeted saying, "You can't please everyone," with a screenshot of the stats and the tweet saying that we've not got any corners. And it might be his greatest work. And me being part of it, I've added it to my CV. It's on my LinkedIn.
So you and Alex Howe, quite a bit of a bromance between you two.
Yeah, a forced one. If he's listening, we're only friends because we work together.
Harsh.
Yeah, no, he joined after I'd been the only person doing like solely social media for the club. He joined after about 2 years, 2.5 years, and we hit it off straight away. He is a nice boy, I suppose. I'm taller than him, and I'm funnier and more handsome than him, but he's doing all right for himself.
Have you got that on your LinkedIn as well?
I do, yeah. That is my entire LinkedIn page I just read out.
We asked for some questions on Twitter from listeners, and we got a couple. So one there, but with Alex coming in, because obviously when you joined, it became sort of a growing role, really, social media manager in that sense. And I assume not every club had them, and it's obviously been a much expanding role over the last few years. So if sort of let us know just sort of a general bit of what you kind of do, but then on top of that, we've had a question from Ben Robinson, which has said, how would you advise someone looking to pursue a career in the world of social media management? And how did you try to be different to other club accounts and the content they produce?
Blimey. Well,
this is not an interview. We're not going to give you a job after this.
It was worth a try. I sort of fell into the role through, I studied journalism at uni and then was working as a football writer for Squawker, you know, the news, football news site. And I sent Steve Parrish an email because I'd done my dissertation on Palace and supporting them. It was shit. That's why I can't remember the gist of it. But it was rubbish, but I got loads of contacts out of it. And I emailed Steve and he didn't reply, but clearly someone saw it, and it was along the lines of, I think they were about to advertise for the first social media staff, and I just happened to be right place, right time, rather than necessarily any good. So it's a bit hard. Like, when people have asked me that before about what advice would I have for someone, and I sort of think, like, I got very lucky, and it's hard to say, well, what you should do is just email the chairman and everything will work out, because that's not always the way. But I always tried to give people work experience when I was in the role. So, because I imagine that's the sort of thing employers will want to look out for. But then with that, you're going to have to do 3 hours and all sorts of dirty jobs, I'd imagine. There's no clear route, I wouldn't have said. I imagine there's probably better qualified people than me to ask. But try your best. Try and be helpful.
Yeah.
Build up a good CV. That would be my advice.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? You look at any job, everything requires experience these days, and a hefty amount of experience. And you wonder, you know, how does anyone build this experience and get this? You know, it's really tough.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it might be pure luck.
Well, good old whoever Steve Parrish's PA was. Right, so we got some slightly less serious questions. On a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult was it to spin a good social media story on Jordan Much?
You know, there were times It was very easy. He scored a worldie every year in preseason. It really did, didn't it? There was one in South Africa that was just nuts. Like, he ran from halfway, passed about seven players infield, and then lobbed the goalkeeper. And I was like, this is it. Here we go. We'll tweet that to the end of time. But it was one of those. Yeah, I think sort of just left him alone.
Yeah, I mean, he very promptly blocked me on Twitter, did Jordan Much, after he come out with some homophobic nonsense, and I called him out on it and told him he could fuck off back to QPR. So I never saw another Jordan Much tweet after that. So,
yeah, I didn't tweet that one.
Chris Hamblin Hambo of Back in the Nest has said, assuming it was Sam, how smug was his face when he did the tasty jerk white smoke joke? If it wasn't, how annoyed is he that it wasn't him? So, first, if you just explain what that was for people who might not know.
So that was, I can probably take 1% credit for that, because I hit the button on the tweet, but it was a really short, like 2 or 3 second video of white smoke coming out of the chimney at Tasty Jerk by Selhurst, and to announce the new manager. And I forget, was it maybe De Boer that was joining? And but that was a joke from almost the beginning of the internet on the BBS, wasn't it? And I know that the BBS is, I'll go off on a tangent, but my favourite ever tweet was someone saying, why do you care what people on the BBS say? It's just full of old men who love their dogs too much. which has stuck with me for some reason. But the BBS have been using that joke forever. And we sort of, we were having a conversation in the car park at Selhurst when we were going to film something locally. And we sort of just figured, we'll get the footage. Maybe we'll never use it. But it was very much a team effort. So I'd have to say, I would have thought it was Chris, Hannes, Charlotte, all of us involved at that time, whenever it was. It seems like a lifetime ago.
Nice. We've had that guy, James, has asked, what was your best day working at Palace? I know there must have been many of them.
That's Hannes. How bizarre. That he, and any day I worked with him, I would say, he was he's a sweetheart. My best day working at Palace was probably, the thing is, tour was always so good, and I always felt bad saying that too publicly. I would always say it after a beer if someone asked me in the pub during the season, but because like the results don't matter, a lot of the time you're in a place that I certainly at the time even less so now I've got a kid, could never afford to go. And so you're just like sort of mucking about, making the most of it. So the tours were always, as a combined few days, were always good. Deadline day.
I bet it was. Mm. Did you ever pretend you were a player?
Yeah. Definitely did. There was a few times when there was a time in Berlin where we were at the airport, you know, when we played Union Berlin? And we were waiting to come home, and it was like we were there one night. We were in a fairly shit hotel. It was like 34 degrees or something, and everyone had only brought like one change of clothes, sweating through them. And the Scottish woman and her son came up to me and asked for a picture because I was in club tracksuit. I was not the shape of a footballer. I was the shape of an aubergine. And she asked for the photo. And I was like, oh, no, I'm really sorry. I'm part of the media team. And as I turned round, because I was stood next to Yannick Bolasie, and I went to gesture, here's a footballer. She went, oh, sorry, and shuffled off. So she missed the opportunity.
But hot on the heels of you pretending to be a footballer, how many kick-ups can you do? Alex Howells asked.
Oh, this boy is going to be the death of me. He can do about 1,000, and he once demonstrated that in the office. I can do, I think my record is 12.
So it's a solid effort, but especially for someone shaped like an aubergine.
Yeah.
These are friendly. How much of a twat do you feel after watching your celebration back from the penalty you scored at Selhurst on your last day?
I was so het up on adrenaline that it really didn't dawn on me until about halfway through the following week how shit that celebration was. I
look awful. You look confused. You look like you didn't know what to do.
I've just woken up on the penalty spot. It's so bad. I'd agreed with Seb, the photographer, that once I inevitably scored, I'd run towards him and celebrate. But I haven't run in about 10 years. And as soon as I scored, I then sort of backed out and did a little hop. It wasn't great. I admire any footballer that gets off the ground and does a proper chest beating celebration, because it is a lot of effort.
Well, you can learn from the kids these days. It seems like going and mocking the away fans every time a kid scores in the halftime challenge. It's straight over there giving it the big one. So, but yeah, I'm not sure you had that 50-yard sprint in your locker.
I'd have got a coin in the eye, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit different when you're 7 years old, I suppose. Right, okay, I think that's enough questions. So now we'll let you get on with it. When we come back from this, we're going to start building you up to Arsenal this weekend.
Who knows, wins are changing the culture of gambling by making it social. They have removed the bookies from the equation and now you can bet on sports against your mates. It's a great way to rake in the cash from your friends and have a bit of banter along the way in the chat section. No odds, no bookmakers. This is all about the prediction on sporting events. The more you know, the more you win. Download the app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For more information, visit their website at www.whoknowswins.com. Hey, Mike, so, you know, you've heard all the headlines, haven't you, right? You've heard they're not a bookmaker, so there's no bookmakers involved. You can bet against friends and colleagues and even people you don't like. There's a social chat section to every league with live score updates. It's simple to use, and there's public and private leagues as well. That appeals, right?
It does. I'd much rather give away my money to mates and have them send me messages telling me I'm useless than giving it straight to the bookie. So, yeah, that sounds right up my street.
Absolutely. And I will guarantee you that should I be successful against you, I will be using the chat function to abuse you in a variety of ways.
I expect nothing less.
So to set up a league, as we have on Back of the Nest, all you do is set an entry fee, choose your matches, invite all of your mates in, and you all predict the outcome of those games. The person with the most correct predictions wins the pot of money. You can also join preset public leagues with larger pots of money, competing against players from all of the UK. And obviously to join our league, as I'm sure you'll want to, download the app, deposit £5 and find us on the home screen of the app.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whipped in by Milivojevic, Benteke! Crystal Palace in front. Christian Benteke delivers at last.
Well, that talks about Arsenal consistently giving away cheap free kicks. It's what they've done here. And then they don't mark. Of all the players, you've got to pick up.
Iwobi. Lacazette. Ozil. Arsenal level. It was a brilliant finish by Mesut Ozil. So cool, so composed.
One of those substitutes, Iwobi involved in the build-up, and the best player on the pitch for Arsenal has been Lacazette, and he's involved in the goal. And it's exactly that type of run that Unai Emery will demand from Mesut Ozil.
On by Benteke. Here's Zaha! Palace back in front! Arsenal so impressive at the start of the second half, simply switched off. And Wilfried Zaha has been able to restore Crystal Palace's lead.
Crystal Palace have had very little attacking play in the second half. Straightforward flick on from Benteke. Diabolical defending from Mustafi. He's urging his goalkeeper to be out to deal with that.
Milivojevic to deliver. Yeah! And it's been put in. James McArthur with a final touch. Arsenal showing their vulnerability at a set play again.
Right, yes, that's commentary there from our victory at the Emirates last season. I say commentary there, assuming the producers put it in. do you know, my main takeaway from that Arsenal game last year, Hesketh, was the celebration for James McArthur's goal when he sort of gets surrounded by some players and then four players coming from different angles and all jump at the same time.
Like a multi-bundle.
Yeah, so... Do you think we can go there and do it again this season? We were the last team to win there. I know in terms of games, it isn't that many ago because it was towards the back end of last season, but they don't lose there very often.
I mean, you know what my answer is going to be, but I've got a mate who has a season ticket at Arsenal, and he's been really going all out to tell me how crap they are and how we're going to beat them. And I've asked him, you know, I've said, seriously now, jokes aside, I know that I'm a misery guts and all that, but what do you actually think? And he reckons we're going to win 2-1. And this is without Mustafi in the team. Now, if Mustafi was playing, like, away win banker. But, you know, a lot has been made lately because they lost to Sheffield United. And I watched that game and they were rubbish. But I think there is a difference between Arsenal away and Arsenal at home. It might not be as big as it used to be, but I still think they're a pretty formidable team going forward at home. And, you know, I think the key for us on Sunday is to not do what we did at Tottenham, which was let a goal in the first 10 minutes or however much it was, and then just sort of get steamrolled. Because, you know, I think Arsenal are quite capable of scoring a lot if they're on the front foot. So, can we beat them? I think no. But if we are to have a chance, we really need to keep it very tight and hope that Wayne Hennessy's not in goal.
Well, Arsenal did what Spurs did to us a couple of seasons ago, didn't they? Scored four very, very quick goals. So they certainly have it in their locker as well. But looking back to Wilfried Zaha's goal at the Emirates last season, Sam, you say you're not a footballer, but surely you could have done better than Mustafi did against him.
I don't know. I was impressed with that defending. Yeah, I did some homework and I watched the highlights back of that, and it's so bad. I can't believe. I don't know what he's trying to do. He sort of just shepherds Wilf into the channel for the ball one on one. It's a great assist.
I don't know. He seems to believe that he thinks Leno should be coming out, who's like 25 yards away and is showing no sign of coming out. It's one of the most bizarrest pieces of defending. And that man has a World Cup winner's medal. So it's not too late for any of us. of course, you may not know, Crystal Palace fans and Arsenal fans will be walking together to the game from Selhurst Park on Saturday. Sorry, Sunday morning. Don't turn up Saturday. There'll be no one there. And this is in aid of mental health. The idea is to get people to walk to the game and talk to each other and, you know, just make contact, talk about your feelings, etc. So if you want to go, it's not too late. You can still join. Head over to, if you look at Homesdale Cravatics on Twitter, you'll be able to find the details there. I think they leave Selhurst around 9:30 in the morning, and then it's a couple of hours walking, half an hour in a pub to get a beer in, relax a bit, and then walk all the way to the Emirates. It was done last season as well, and quite a few hundred people turned up, made it onto the news, and they're hoping to make it a bit bigger this year. And that's obviously hot on the heels of the marathon march, which, Hesketh, we will definitely do next season, maybe.
Let's say yes now. And then, like, if we start training now, and by training I mean I now live in a house rather than a flat, so I've got stairs, and maybe by like this time next year we'll be capable of walking 26 miles.
Sam, did you do the marathon march?
I did not, no. I managed to avoid that every year.
They were like, "This, there's no bonus this year, Sam, but you don't have to do the marathon march."
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you were in that meeting.
Yeah, something like that.
It's always international break, isn't it? So I would tend to have plans and I would cover it from home. Not that it's not a great cause, but everything I needed to do, I could do from a phone in the pub.
Yeah, well, it's right. I mean, it's anyone that goes Palace home and away like I do will understand as well that when it's international break, usually the missus has the say over what you do that weekend. Right, I've been listening to the Ask blog in preparation for this week, which if I seem to remember rightly, I think Steve Parrish appears to be a big fan of. Not that I secretly believe he's an Arsenal fan or anything like that, but there you go. They've started with fullback weaknesses, Hesketh, saying that Kolasinac is costing them week in, week out, saying he's terrible on the ball. He's just a bit of a bulldozer going forward, but causing them more problems than he's resolving. So again, that's another chance for Wilf to show off his stuff at the Emirates.
Absolutely. I think it's also a different proposition to playing a team, you know, like Man City, where my mate last week was saying, you know, he hopes Wilf doesn't have a good game, but I think Man City have enough to sort of counter us even getting in the ball. Whereas Arsenal, yeah, I think certainly Kolasinac is a weakness. I think that's fairly well known. And if we do put Wilf out on the right and he gets his tail up, which he should do, because, I mean, really, they were one of the main suitors for him in the summer. So you'd think he'd really want to show what he can do at the Emirates. And I think with Wilf, I've said it a few times on here, but, you know, if early on he beats his man and, yeah, gets his tail up and really starts going, then, you know, he's going to be a massive handful. And after his display last year at the Emirates, if he can really get on Kolasinac's back, I think that's going to be a massive, massive plus for us, and probably the way that we're going to do any damage if we do.
Now, I mean, Arsenal are Arsenal, so we know, we've already talked about how they can come out and just blow teams away. They have enough talent there to do it, but they obviously seem, everything seems a bit negative at the moment in there. Sam, have Arsenal had it too good for too long, and they're not really justified in feeling so negative about being fifth in the league and having a decent start and being above Spurs? And do you think them calling for Emery's head already is a bit over the top?
It's probably a bit over the top calling for his head, because above everything else, he seems like quite a nice bloke. But there's something really, really enjoyable about watching Arsenal and United in particular being dog shit. There's something. But they were the top dogs. Like when I was sort of my most formative years watching football, and it was all Ferguson v Wenger and all of that. And so to see them both languishing, is there's something very delicious about it. But I don't know, like, they're not doing as bad as I thought. I looked at the table because I bothered to do a bit of research for this. I'm so out of touch these days. And they're much higher than I thought. You see all the stuff they say on Twitter, and I sort of thought, oh, okay, well, they're going to be around mid-table. And they're not. Like, they're still doing okay, but they're Arsenal. Like, they're not going to be competing with Liverpool and City. They're just the most tiresome fan base, aren't they, when it comes to particularly Twitter, which obviously is where I live. They are very hard work.
Yeah, I agree with everything Sam said there. You know, my mate, he was moaning about how crap they're doing. I looked at the table also, because I I mean, normally I'm looking down the table, you know, I'm like, who's in the bottom three is basically what I look at the table for. But yeah, he's like, oh, doing really badly. And I was, and I had a look, and we've had not an easy start, but certainly going into the next few games, it's been relatively all right. I was like, you're still above us. So I know everything's relative, but like Sam said, you're not going to win the league, are you? So Europa places are where you belong. So the fact that you're in the Europa places, even though you're, you know, to quote them, playing crap, I mean, says it all, really. So I think we've got to take, with a little pinch of salt, or maybe a huge rock of salt, all of the moaning from all of that Arsenal fan TV nonsense, because they just get het up over, you know, him subbing someone in the 78th minute instead of the 76th. You know, they just wind themselves up to the point of blowing their top, when actually things are all right.
Mm-hmm. Does it not stink a bit of us and our fan base, Heskey?
I don't know if that's a dig at me.
I just mean our fan base in general is, you know, we're six in the league at the moment. We've got something like the fourth best record in 2019 of all teams. And there are people genuinely saying that Hodgson's a dinosaur and should probably go.
Well, until that last bit, I was like, oh, you are actually talking about me. I think football fans, especially with social media, and I'm sure Sam has been on like the receiving end of a lot of nonsense when he was at Palace. But like social media and Twitter, especially, just gives people a way to easily, really quickly moan and whine. And this is coming from me. I spend all my time moaning about stuff when, you know, realistically, everything's all right. And I think that's true of most football teams. I would imagine if you go on a Saturday and look at the tweets of fans who support a team that's just lost, it'll all be rough viewing. But I think Arsenal are just, you know, elevated a bit more in that sense, where there are, you know, people actively look out on Twitter and YouTube to see just how mental they're all going, which is quite funny. But I also, you know, 3 minutes in, wonder what my life is where I'm watching it.
Yeah, Sam, you must have had some tremendous instant responses after games.
Yeah, there were a few. The worst would always come when we were favourites, or we were expected to win, and we ruined neutral fans' accumulators. And then suddenly, it wasn't just angry Palace fans, it was like Real Madrid fans and people from Saudi Arabia, like really going in two-footed on us for losing 4-0 to Sunderland or something like that. But the best was, and it might be one of my favourite ever defeats, up there with Swansea 5-4, which was utter chaos, was the, you know, when we lost 3-2 at Burnley and inexplicably threw everyone forward in the 89th minute to try and snatch a win?
Yep.
That one, after the game. So that was the weekend following a video we'd done with Christian Benteke, where Chris had got him to like play kabaddi and eat grapes, and there's all these things he could do in 7 seconds after scoring really quickly for Belgium. And people were tweeting us after the game, calling for the manager's head, for the assistant manager, Keith Millen, he's got to go. Andy Woodman, the goalkeeping coach, what's he doing? Chris Grierson doing that video with Benteke. What?
Oh, it was all the grapes' fault. It sapped his energy in the closing minutes, and he couldn't get back. Oh, that game was horrible at Burnley, because Crystal Palace fans made the ill-fated mistake of singing 2-0 and you fucked it up. And and then so obviously Burnley get the winner to go 3-2 up, and then walking from outside back to the station was just thousands of Burnley fans singing at us 2-0 and we fucked it up. Beautiful. One of your things that your Arsenal mate might have touched on, Heskey, was that their willingness to go back under pressure. This is what Arseblog was saying. You know, they will pass backwards. They're too scared of passing forwards. And as a result, it ends up with them being a bit pedestrian. We tend to get on top of teams quite well. You know, we've carved open Liverpool at Anfield by giving them a higher press and stuff like that. So this is something where we could get at them as well.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And that's something I know that the review pod touched on, whether Luca should keep his place. And I actually think in a game like Arsenal and in the form that he's in, I wouldn't be too upset if you know, James McCarthy, for example, came in, because it does make us a little bit more mobile. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Luka, but his form is poor. And I think if you look at, okay, West Ham are a different team to Arsenal, but, you know, the midfield looked more mobile, looked more agile for me against West Ham. And I think that if we're able to use midfield like that, it will be a big plus for us, because, you know, Roy does like to set his teams up to defend well, but also to harry and press. Even at the top, like with Jordan Ayew, you know, who runs himself into the ground these days. So it's good to hear that. I mean, it's all, you know, it's easy to say, obviously, on a podcast than it is to do it on the pitch. But yeah, I think, well, you know, we have a good setup. I think we're a very hardworking team. And if they are currently sort of worrying when they're under pressure and going backwards and allowing the opposition to really get on them, then hopefully that will play into our hands for sure.
I mean, to be honest, I'm really worried that you're saying to inject some mobility into our midfield, we need to put in a player that hasn't been able to walk for the last 2 years, but there you go. Mesut Ozil's not been anywhere near their squad for the last couple of weeks. Sam, I joked earlier that he's going to be joining Victor Camarasa in the missing out on the squad lounge. Being on this side of the fence now, back on the fan side of the fence, you get a player come in, a bit like with Max Meyer, you do the whole, like, you know, build up and you get all the pictures and everyone gets really excited, and then just not even in the squad. How have you felt about seeing Victor Camarasa and his really, really slow start at the club?
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because he was, from what I saw last season, was so good for Cardiff. I remember him scoring that ridiculous goal against Leicester, and did he win, or he was in the conversation for their player of the year? And they all seemed to love him. So I was really excited when he came in. And then, to be honest, until you were joking about him earlier, I did completely forget he even existed. As a Cardiff City player, let alone a Palace player. It's really bizarre. I don't know. Like, I think, yeah, like you say, on the outside now, I never had any in the knowledge anyway. So it's no different, really. But we hyped up Jaroslav Jak when he signed. We went all out for him, and that didn't exactly turn out too well. At least he's still in the country, Camarasa.
Well, you know, that one, I always spoke about this, were him and Erdal Rakip. And they both got the full as if they were new signings. But I always felt like that was, we have to do this because we're not signing anyone, so we have to make it look like we've actually signed people.
I wish that much thought was put into it. We sort of find out that players are joining the day before. Like, you're mainly relying on media reports or that sort of thing. And so it was really just like, we set out our stall with the Jarek Jak one, like, this is how we want to announce the next signing. Not that we didn't want to announce him like that, but like, right, let's take him round, sell our stall. And then no one else came in, and we're like, okay, we've got to try and play with all these photos for the rest of the season because he's not playing.
Well, with that also brought about another great tweet, the poll by the poll.
Oh, yeah, that was great. The polls in the Arthur, wasn't it, where that someone tweeted about getting rid of them, and it wound up the Polish fan club. Yeah, I forgot about that one. But we went around Selhurst modelling for that. There's photos of me leaning against that pole where I look like Jarek Jak is a stretched out, shaven version of me. Yeah. Squat.
That's nice. I like that idea of just mimicking the photo shoots for yourself and just like having the same photo spread of yourself is quite amusing.
I will lose photos one day. There's a lot of them.
Definitely. So it's a one for the future for sure. You touched on Luka before there, Heskiff, and a lot of fans have been suggesting after the West Ham game, not just so he doesn't get back in the team, certainly gets taken off set pieces as well. And if anyone who watched the Arsenal-Sheffield United game the other night, they would have seen that Arsenal were very ropey from set pieces. And I think Patrick van Aanholt's delivery has certainly added an extra dimension to our set pieces in that sense. But watching Arsenal from the outside, Xhaka, we can all see that he's a bit stale in that Arsenal midfield, isn't he? And is it kind of, can you see parallels there in Luka that, you know, on this Arsenal pod, they were saying they couldn't believe that he actually got substituted in the game against Sheffield United, which was the same for Luka late on in the game against Man City. Do you think it's a similar sort of, you know, they've one trick ponies in that sense?
It sounds a bit like it. I don't want to dig Luka out too much because, you know, I do love him. I just think, you know, much like I said earlier this season, that I thought it was right that Andros got dropped. You know, I think if a player's not playing well, then over a large period of time, it's not like a couple of games we're talking here, then I think you drop him and you play someone else in the squad because that's why you have a squad. Whether that's McCarthy, whether that's Max Meyer, another forgotten man. I think that's the point of having a selection of players that you can pick from. And I just think Luka's just not been at it. And I understand there's all these stats about passing accuracy, which they went over on the review show, but he just, you know, like against Man City, he was coming very deep, but doing nothing with it, you know, and then the rest of the midfield would come deep and it would just, we just sort of sit there. And I don't think it helps us at all to do that. With Xhaka, I mean, I don't watch a lot of Arsenal, to be fair. He was crap when he was a left-back against us, but he's not a left-back, so I'll give him that. He just seems like he gets booked all the time, so I suppose in that sense he is a bit like Luka. But he seems like a bit of a boo boy for them. I think he's a captain as well, isn't he? Which I didn't realise. The Arsenal fans that I know and that I've sort of read comments from haven't liked him for quite a while. So I guess if he's hot-headed, then we try and just wind him up and hope we can get another red card because we seem to be quite good at that at the beginning of the season.
Sam?
Yeah, I'd agree with Hesketh on the point about Luka as well. It's not necessarily, and I know he's been in quite poor form and the passing stats, all of that. It's not necessarily an indictment of him because we have got insane depth at centre mid. I know it doesn't seem like it because loads of them don't make the squad every week, but there was a time last season when he was really quite ropey for a while and there were issues with his national team, and it seemed like everything was weighing heavy on him. And it might just be a case that this is an ideal opportunity to give him a bit of a break, as much as the people on Twitter who are calling for his head, a bit of a break. And try something new, hassle and harry them, and sort of see if he can just chill out a bit.
Yeah, I just with Roy Hodgson, he's got his trusted group of players, hasn't he? I think it's very similar to Pardew in that sense, but I think the difference is Hodgson's much better at keeping the people on the fringes a lot happier than Pardew was. You know, it always felt like with Pardew, if he was in his 11, you were the golden boys. And everyone else was just kind of forgotten about, where I feel like Hodgson, everyone seems to say that he gives more of a, you understand why you're not in the team and you understand what you have to do to get into the team. And I think that's partly where Camarasa and Max Meyer outdid themselves in the Colchester game when we lost at home, where they got overrun by a League Two midfield. So it's a bit tougher for them. And I don't doubt that Hodgson is telling them what they need to do to get back in that team. And I struggle to see how Luka is going to get dropped based on what I know of Hodgson, but I certainly feel like he could do with it. Hesketh, on the review show, were they talking about his pass stats actually being good?
Yeah. Apologies to Hambo if I've remembered this incorrectly. But, you know, he had a good pass completion rate, I think, and Hambo sort of said, you know, a lot of the passes, you know, he's not in the team to pass, really. He's in there to break the other team up. So that he's got a decent pass completion rate is good, which I understand. But my issue with stats is always that you can find a stat to, you know, back your argument. Mm. So I don't really put as much faith in them as some people. I just think that, you know, you looked at Jimmy sort of played Luka's role at West Ham, and I thought Jimmy was superb against West Ham. And he's got the energy to play that role, even though we're sort of used to seeing him a little bit further forward. And the other thing is with Luka, I mean, I know he's our captain, but you would say now that we've got the ready-made replacement. Cahill is a fantastic captain, I think. If Luka doesn't play, we've got the players who can take the set pieces. PVA, I think, took the corner that Benteke headed very close to scoring. So we've got the things that Luka is in the team for, in some sense, we've got replacements for. So I think it's less, you know, dropping him because he's crap. I just think he's a bit out of form, and giving him a rest, like both of you have said, is probably the best thing for him and the best thing for the team, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, on this Arsenal podcast today, was also talking about how Xhaka's passes have been of a better percentage completion rate this season, but I said that's because he's going sideways a lot more with them, and I think there's an argument there for basically Xhaka is Luka Milivojevic. Have you ever seen him in the room together? Is what one question. But I think we'll move on from there and go to Pepe, the last thing, because I am petrified, Sam, that this is going to be the week that he finally does it.
I'm exactly the same. When he came in, he was straight in my fantasy team. In our fantasy auction, we'd spent untold money on him. I was convinced that he was going to come in, hit the ground running. And then in that first game, I think he went through one-on-one and he looked lightning quick. And he sort of just fluffed his lines, but it was one of those where you're like, okay, he's going to be great. He's going to, like, next time he takes that and he ends up on 30-odd. And then he's just been like a ghost. It's really weird. Like that clip of him and Wilf where the Arsenal fans were like, look at this link up. And it was Wilf skinned three players and put it on a plate for him. Like, just know tomorrow, not tomorrow, sorry. I'm wishing my life away. Sunday he's going to turn it on 1,000,000%.
Yeah, I feel the same. I just, I don't know. It's got to happen for him at some point. And on the Arsblog, they were talking about there was green shoots in the Sheffield United performance. I mean, he did miss an absolute sitter by only slightly connecting with what should have been a tap-in. But yeah, hopefully his dire form can go on for a couple more weeks and pass us over. But we'll see how that goes. All right, let's get into some predictions. We've got some predictions from Facebook this week, Heskip. I think this is a first. Paul Hughes has said it's going to be 1-0 to Crystal Palace with a Joel Ward goal. And Neil Kosker has said 2-1 to Palace with Ayew and Benteke. Sam, that's very optimistic. We know Heskip won't be. So let's start with yours, Sam.
Yeah. I like to think I'm optimistic. I normally, I'm worried how much this evening I'm agreeing with Hester.
You should be very worried, mate.
Yeah, that is nervy. But I'll say, yeah, why not? Before the City game, I predicted we'd get 15 points from our next 5 games. So I'm going to say the Eagles win 2-1.
Following on along with Neil Kosker there. Heskiff, what are you going for?
I'm going to quote my own tweet that from like 5 minutes after Arsenal lost to Sheffield United. So whoever's producing, get your finger on the swear button. I said, you watch these useless turn it on against us on Sunday. Pepe nailed on to score. I stand by that. Nothing has changed my mind. Talking on this podcast makes me even more sure that we're going to lose. I'll go 3-1 to Arsenal. Pepe will get 2.
They say, well, imitation is the biggest form of flattery, and you're imitating yourself there. I was just quite special.
I've turned into that picture of the two Spider-Men pointing at each other.
I'm going to go for a 1-1 in this one. I think it'll be a tight game. Arsenal, they're a lot better at home, but you know we're very good away from home as well. So I think it'll be a close run game, and it's a really high pressure situation for them. There's reports that, you know, no points or not 2 wins from their next couple of games could really mean the end for Emery. So he's going to be under a lot of pressure in this. So it's going to certainly make for an interesting affair. And I would absolutely love it if we could do a double and then follow it up with a third win next season, like we did against Liverpool at Anfield a couple of seasons back. But there you go. Those are the 3 predictions. We've gone across the board there, a win, a loss and a draw. So one of us is going to be right. That's for sure. Right. We'll be back after this.
No paywall, no subscription.
Back of the Nest. Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles.
Free forever.
Okay, that's almost your lot for this week. Please do all the normal stuff, you know. Go and leave us reviews and ratings on your podcast apps. Listen to the other pods.
The Love Sport pod is already available for you to listen, so you can go back there. DR is on it this week. And then the review show will be, I assume, coming out on Monday night as the game is on Sunday, and Hambo and his team will eloquently go through and probably just moan, I'd imagine. That's all they do. Offer up some stats, all that stuff. Head to backofthenest.com. Email us at hi@backofthenest.com. And of course, for the review show, send your voice notes to WhatsApp on 0203 575 1766. Sam, thank you very much for joining and sharing your experiences with us during your legendary period as CPSC social manager.
That's all right. Thank you for having me. Legendary is far too grandiose. I'm an idiot.
I'm basically a guy trying to make his mates laugh in the pub. That's how to be a good social media manager, apparently. But that's what it's all about, right? Football, having a laugh with your mates down the pub and at the game and that. So I think that's why it works so well and why people, I think, look on your time in a club with a very good light. So enjoy being a new parent and actually having your weekends back and, you know, doing a normal job.
Thank you, I am.
And Hesketh, thanks as always.
Cheers.
As I always look forward to your nasally tones on a Wednesday night, mate.
Yeah, I'm the only one that doesn't have a cold, but permanently sounds like he does. So, cheers.
Yeah, well, you need to go on holiday with Albert and get some nice weather down you. That'll sort you right out. Right, we'll be back next Thursday with the Leicester preview podcast. I'm not going to the Leicester game, but more of that next week. So, until then, up the Palace.
Back of the Nest match preview podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants. 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.